In this episode of Expect Exception, Toby Tim talks to Roman and me about property-based testing, how powerful it is, if it has any downsides at all, and which library you can use for JavaScript applications. Stay to the end of the episode if you want to know what you could do with your time instead of spending it on writing hundreds of tests manually. I'm your host Vanessa, enjoy the episode. Hello and welcome back, Roman. And let me say once more, congratulations to your daughter and that your 3 months old daughter decided to move in with you.
Thank you for having me. And yeah, I'm as excited as you are. I'm very happy she made the decision and live with us. And yeah.
I hope she stays at home like a few months at least.
I hope so too.
until she decides to move out in a small flat in an apartment and start coding.
Yeah, that's my big hope. Stay with us and then go straight into coding. That's a great career path.
And I'm also very happy to announce that we have Toby Tim on the show today. And before we hop into today's topic, that is about property-based testing, do you mind giving an introduction about yourself for our listeners?
Yeah, hello, everybody. Thanks for having me. I'm Toby or Tobias, however you want to call me. I'm 30 years old. I'm a JavaScript developer, and I try to avoid testing as much as possible because I hate it. I totally hate testing, and maybe that's why I picked property-based testing today as a topic.
Maybe that makes you also a very good tester. I just thought of that sentence from a very famous site from somebody, I guess also a very famous person, who said, like, you need to hire, like, a lazy person. Because a lazy person will find the best solution for our problem.
Yeah, another one. That's very true. It keeps true.
In the first episodes of Expect Exception, we spoke about things like Cypress and how to test components in general. So usually we started these episodes with like, okay, this is like the hot shit right now and we need to talk about it. And we didn't have a huge introduction about these libraries and frameworks because I assume that most of the front-end developers heard of these kinds of tools. But then property-based testing, I assume that not so many people have heard that term even before, and I can't even say, is this an older thing? Is this a new thing? Will it be the next type? So, Toby, what actually is property-based testing?
Yeah, so I wouldn't say it's the hot shit right now. So property-based testing, to keep it simple terms, is just that your input data for your tests is generated by the computer and not by a human being, for example. And the idea for property-based testing, I think it's kind of old because it's coming from the functional programming world, and it's introduced by languages like Haskell. So Haskell has a feature, I think it's called QuickCheck. What QuickCheck is doing, it takes your formula of your function, for example, x plus x equals y. And quick check is just generating 10,000 of inputs and combinations for your function. Yeah, to test it against if it's valid with minus numbers or can handle floating numbers and all of that stuff. So yeah, property-based testing just is trying to find edge cases and many possible solutions how your test can fail in simple terms.
My first question would be, in this case, like 10,000 use cases to throw it like something sounds great. How can I make sure like those are kind of valuable, right? Like, do you define the range? Like if you say, okay, if it's a function manipulating a string, can you say, okay, those examples should be mostly string related because everything else kind of throws an exception anyway? Or kind of how do you handle this to be make sure that the test makes sense?
Yes, so you can, for example, FastCheck is a library in JavaScript and TypeScript for this so-called property-based testing. And you define in this library kind of, this is a string arbitrary, so it's called arbitraries. For example, this is an email, or this should be an email address. So the string is only generated as an email address and maybe null and undefined. But you could also give constants or define your custom input data. So you can really vary the input data you want to have, and can also exclude cases where you know for sure that it will fail in any way.
Okay, so let me start again trying to understand what it actually does. If I'm not trying to think about like snapshots test or component tests, but really of some kind of unit test, and I assume I have a function where I would put into items. For example, I have a e-commerce shop and I allow the users to put like 10 items of the same thing into the cart, but not anymore because this is kind of weird then. So I would assume that the valid things for this item would be like to have in the cart between 0 and 10. And then thinking back of like QA testing, I think of things like minus 1, 0, 10. 11 would again be invalid, like minus 1. And then 1 to 9 should again be valid. And these are tests I usually write manually. So I understand that with property-based testing, all of these different inputs are then generated for me so that I don't have to manually write 10 or 11 or more tests to test the same function for valid and invalid states.
Yes, exactly. So if you take a shopping cart, for example, you could even automate it with property-based testing that you create a custom generator for cart items so that the test itself just spam your cart with custom cart items with a title, for example, description. Or you could even or could imagine it when we take a sign-up form, for example, where you put in an email address or a password. These two inputs, or there are many possibilities that a user could do wrong in this case. You can automate all of that. So you have your simple test, and you just wrap it around this property-based testing magic, I would say. And it just fills your test with the needed testing data. You could imagine it maybe if you know Faker. Faker is kind of like a service and also a library for getting kind of email addresses, company names, and telephone numbers, etc., etc. This just automates all of that stuff so that you don't need to care what kind of data, or you only need to define what kind of data should be in the functions, and this will be translated and given to the arguments of your test.
How would the... I assume there are just libraries for that, but let's talk later about it. So I just assume there are different tools to use. But how do they actually create these different kind of input values? Because I just said, okay, there might be something like minus 1 to 11 for a special case where I allow 0 to 10. But does it also know how... that it might should create strings or floating numbers?
Yes, so you could you define beforehand that you want strings or numbers or a combination, maybe in JavaScript world, an object with a string and a number. So you need to define the data structure your test needs. Factory functions within the helper library XYZ will then take care of creating for you these input data.
Okay. I think you triggered me with factory functions because I'm a huge fan of factories. So this means I would probably really kind of use a factory function in this case to say, okay, like my shopping cart, and to say, this is how a shopping item would roughly look like with like its quantity key and a string and this kind of stuff. And then like whatever library you use is like usually just creates like 50,000 different combinations of this object and just throws them and says, hey, when does it work and when not?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, I think I get it. So in the, maybe as a follow-up question or so, in the process, when would you start kind of writing these kind of like tests? And how do you run them? Like, is it mostly something that I say, I do this during development to make sure the code that I write is like bulletproof, but I don't run them automatically every time, because at least like 10,000 objects sound kind of costly to me if I do it for a lot of unit tests? Or is it something to say, okay, no, that's like just default part of your CI pipeline and will always run?
So for testing frameworks like Jest or Mocha in JavaScript world, you put it in your actual test, so you don't need special testing files or any like anything like that. You just put it directly in your test where you want to have it. And at least with the only library I've used for property-based testing until now, I never experienced any differences in executing these tests. So I don't have any performance issues until now with, and I use it where I know I need a lot of data, or it should be wise to test it against X amount of combinations.
Are these property-based tests purely thought for unit tests, or could I also use them for other kinds of tests?
You can use it anywhere. So you could even use it within a Cypress test, or use it within a Playwright or Test Cafe or whatever framework. So end-to-end testing, integration testing, unit testing. So you can use them anywhere because you just web the, or use it within the testing function to generate your data.
Mm-hmm. So I understand this is not a new tool. This is not a new library. I have to migrate my old testing framework now too. But this is just a kind of a handy shorthand to just generate all of the input data for me that I'm kind of too lazy to write by myself, but also because I'm just a human, just might forget about some cases.
Yes, it has a short learning curve because you need to understand how you would write, for example, your custom factory functions to get this kind of customized data. It maybe also looks a bit weird, first of all, but after you get used to it and get the first bug or find the first test that fails because you never thought about that edge case, or that you can input null or undefined this case, or even a minus value, it really shows its benefits because a human being can fail quite often, but the machine exactly gives you the same data and can generate a lot of thousands of input data for your functions that you would never think of in some cases.
And I guess, like, because you like to be lazy, is what brought you to this pattern?
Yes. So why I was so interested in this whole topic, so my ex-girlfriend saw her programming Haskell in university once, and I saw this tool, QuickCheck from Haskell, and I always thought as a JavaScript developer, why we don't have a tool like that in JavaScript? I don't want to write X amount of tests and need to think about what kind of data I need. Do I need more testing data? Where do I get my testing data from? Yeah, and then suddenly I found this one library on GitHub for exactly that case, and I was just hooked because I know how QuickCheck worked in Haskell, and I was just amazed by how lazy these developers are. And yes, so...
Okay, nice. And kind of what was your experience with it so far? Like, did you feel like it was really providing a lot of value to the product you were working on? And maybe you can give us like a short example about some of the first tests you wrote on the product that you were working on, if you can give the details. But to have like some understanding where you come from and what was your approach to introduce like the property testing in your tool.
So at first I only tried it with like, yeah, simple components in React or Vue, for example, where I generated strings, input strings, or maybe some data, email addresses. And then one of our projects suddenly started to get a bit more complex. So we had this card and I wanted to create the input data for the card so that the card items get generated automatically, and wrote a simple factory function for that. Yeah, and suddenly I experienced bugs that never occurred in any case before and could fix some stuff that were really edgy in these cases. I think for the most people at first, it's kind of like, okay, yeah, that's interesting. You can generate that. Why you don't just have an array of testing data or use just each or something like that? Why you need another library for that? But if you really get a bug or a critical thing, thanks to this framework, then you really see the benefit of this automated generated inputs.
Okay, so let me play just for a minute that I'm a manager now. Thank God I'm not, but let's just assume I am one.
I can tell you I'm a manager and it's like a very nice life.
Okay. You told me that you might want to use property-based testing now because you want to be lazy. But what good comes with it exactly? So how would you explain it to like non-developers?
Yeah, so if you want to explain it to the manager or to Vanessa as a manager, you could argue with, we try to imagine that we have the most dumped user possible that types in data we never expected in any case. Most of us developers don't think in that way or don't think in the way the user would handle our software. We need software to automate these inputs. That would be a good idea to talk to your manager. And also the benefit is you have your functions or your components or whatever you are working with is more tested against anything that could happen or can go wrong. And like always, more testing is never, testing at all should never be avoided. Despite I'm lazy and I don't like to write tests, they are necessary because you can't think about every possible detail that could happen with your software.
I think you make a really great point there. So before I wanted to ask why should I test for a string and a function that only can receive numbers, because how should that ever happen? But when thinking of like user input data, you really can't know what exactly will happen. Even if you sanitize the HTML, even if you test the input, you don't know what will be entered. Also, I guess the same for APIs, because the API will answer with something you might not expect. And then it's really good to have the fallback there to know beforehand what could happen, instead of like having a live production bug and really like have no idea what's going on there. I heard a lot of developers always talking about the 100% test coverage. When I started some side projects with either Chest or Cypress, they generate this like testing coverage for you. And it was kind of exciting because it showed me what it was like having my Hello World skeleton, like 100% test coverage. Then I just added a few functionalities and I still was able to have like this 100% test coverage in the dashboard. But I kind of really thought like, I'm not sure if this is like 100% because it reaches like each branch somehow. But what if there are just some branches missing? Like, what if I just don't have the right if case in my application code, but it actually could be reached, especially if you're writing like a pure JavaScript and not TypeScript where you don't even have types and you make things like, if this variable is a number, then do this. If it's a string, then do this. But what would happen if it's a Boolean? I think now of property-based testing that all of these things are already covered then. I guess now while I'm talking for minutes and minutes, I like to be a manager. It's kind of being the nice other way around, so people explain stuff to me.
Yeah, and I also think, so this is not something huge you need to introduce, so it's really... I would say it's really lightweight to introduce into your tests, and you could also just use it for one test and you don't need to use it for every test, or you don't need to migrate your test now to huge different syntax. So at least in my opinion, you don't need to ask your manager, hey, can I use this library? Because it's so lightweight and it just integrates very well, at least the one library I know, with Jest and Mocha, for example. And this, I think these are the most common testing frameworks that the people use nowadays. It just works.
So I'm curious, like you also said, like some of your background is like in functional programming, if I recall correctly. Do you feel like that your background in this field kind of made adopting this pattern like easier? Because it feels like it's very composition heavy and saying like, okay, I have functions creating all this kind of like data and making sure everything works properly for testing.
So I don't have a background in functional programming. I'm just interested in functional programming. And yeah, I think it's another concept coming from the functional world to get a hype for the non-functional users. I think it's all about what the functional world is trying to get the people right, that method should be always return the same result, so they should be pure as much as possible. And to validate that, or to make sure that the function is pure, they just automated the input generation for the functions.
We talked about the performance before. You said that you didn't experience any downside for the performance, but could there be any other downsides when using property-based testing?
I haven't experienced anything yet, because even the debugging is working really well. So if, for example, test case number 10,001 is failing with the input data XYZ, I got everything in my console and I could replicate this one test case really fast. So I think everything is covered at the moment. And I even think running or starting Cypress is slower than running a test suite with property-based testing. So,
yeah, I was just wondering why we are then not using it all already. If it's just, like you said, unknown to like JavaScript developers, because it's coming from the functional programming world and it's not as hyped as other things. I mean, there can be other things that usually are like downsides, like you have to rewrite your whole test base code, or you have to teach other people first how to write it, but I don't see any of these downsides.
Yeah, I really think it's a niche at the moment. Many of the functional concepts isn't mainstream at the moment. It's there, it's working, and maybe you need to think a little bit different and need to create factory functions for your data. It isn't the hot topic at the moment. Yeah, that's why not everybody is doing property-based testing, and maybe most of the people don't even know about it.
What do you mean exactly with like factory methods for your data?
Yeah, for example, in a property-based testing library like FastCheck, you create with factories, or they're called arbitraries, like I said before. You can imagine in JavaScript that these are just JavaScript objects that, for example, have a property called name. And then you just get the string arbitrary of FastCheck, or the, I even think there are more specified arbitraries, especially for first name and last name, and call the function in that property. So to make it simple, you just call one factory function after another and build your object with that and give that to the FastCheck test executor. And this will be wrapped within your jest or mocha test. And then you can just do the normally, I expect that, I don't know, variable name should be Vanessa at this point. You don't even need to change that much in your test, like I said.
When I looked for property-based testing online, I can totally confirm that it is kind of a niche for like JavaScript, because I immediately found things like quick check for Haskell, as you already mentioned, then something like FS check for .NET, which kind of sounds like fast check. Then there's hypothesis for Python, Scala test for Scala, JUnit, quick check for Java, and Rentley for Ruby. So it kind of everybody but JavaScripters know about this. And you mentioned fast check. Is fast check the JavaScript thing to use, or are there also different kinds of libraries that you could import?
I think there are different libraries, but FastCheck was for me the most complete and the most known at the moment in TypeScript or JavaScript world. So I was just, or I got stuck on FastCheck and only can recommend that library.
Yeah, that's often a thing with like including, importing in library. But you might never know how long it will be supported anymore. So that could be like the one downside, the only one I could think about right now.
So yeah, like always, you need to depend on another library to execute this stuff. And yeah, like you said, at the moment it is well maintained, and I even think it's used in more famous packages like Jest or QueryString and stuff like that. The author even mentions the issues that were detected thanks to FastCheck in Jest, for example. You need to know if you want to depend on another external library for your tests.
Yeah, sure, but we also depend heavily on 1,090. I can't even say a number. Like, we just have like max int of packages already. So, what is another one? And you said that FastCheck is just combinable, like with, I don't know, Mocha, Jasmine, Chess, Cypress, Playwright, whatever.
Yes. So, I haven't used Playwright yet, but I think Playwright is also kind of similar to Cypress. Am I right? I don't know. I haven't used it. But yeah, so most of the things of most of the testing frameworks in JavaScript are built up on Jasmine or Mocha. And yeah, they have a fully integration for Jasmine, Mocha, and Jest.
Yeah, so with a chance of getting a few angry tweets, Playwright is quite similar to Cypress. It is like the successor of Puppeteer. So, kind of the same people who wrote Puppeteer then switched to do Playwright, and it has a few different things. And I'm still not by myself sure what is like the better one, because Playwright sounds like the better one, but Cypress has a huge community. So kind of like the same story for React View and Svelte. It's in the end, it's all of the same, but you have different communities.
Don't forget Test Cafe. Like, people love Test Cafe as well.
Test Cafe, sure. Oh, damn. So many different libraries. So I'm very happy to talk just about something that is just like one additional helper and not just a completely new thing. Sorry, Roman?
I started kind of to look at FastCheck like in parallel a little, because I was like super curious how it looks. The whole code, I'm super confused by it at all. So I'm very happy for everybody else like to check it out as well and kind of raise their own opinion. But I'm curious, like you said, like it's not like the hot shit or super sexy. What would be your kind of like elevator pitch to make it kind of like more of a hot thing for people like to use?
My elevator pitch would be, if you like to write less tests or that you want to have more tests with a variation of data that you could never imagine of, just use FastCheck and let your data be auto-generated and don't depend on manually thinking about every possible edge case or every possible string, email address, password, or floating number that could happen or could be inserted into your function.
Okay. I like that. I think it was a good one.
Yeah, I just also got on their GitHub page. It looks actually also quite stable. It's not like other GitHub repos I checked out in the last couple of months. I was checking out, for example, a storybook alternative for Vue, and then I saw like everything was like 3 years old, and I'm like, oh, maybe not.
Yeah, and I think it's actively developed, so it's nothing that is already dead. And the community is really helpful, so even if you have a question, you can just open a GitHub issue and get an answer within, I don't know, I got it last time, within 2 to 3 hours. So the author of this library is really helping to get you into property-based testing. We also linked a great tutorial and a hands-on what is property-based testing and why you should do it. Yeah, and like I said, we have lots of integration, so even Ava and Tape, if you more like that. I haven't used both of them, but I at least know them. And they have a lot of examples. They have a great documentation. And they also have reasons why you should migrate to property-based testing with FastCheck.
Okay, cool. Yeah, definitely looks like a super useful tool to have in your kind of testing or developer belt. Because, yeah, everything that you have to testing to kind of write more kind of stable code or so, and that comes for quite cheap, I would say, is like a good thing to have. So, sounds exciting.
Yeah, definitely. So, I'm actually through with my questions. Is there anything I haven't asked yet that you want to talk about?
No, I think there isn't really so much to talk about property-based testing, because it's really just, let's automate our input data generation, and I think that's it. So, I think everybody should maybe check out FastCheck, also check out the pages for the Jest integration and the Mocha integration, so you even can use the tools of your test framework. And you should also, or maybe that got me sold also, is these, if you look at these code examples of this issue that were detected, for example, in Jest, they mentioned that to strict equal, for example, fails to distinguish between zero and a number in a scientific notification and just succeeded this test. You think of, I don't know, but personally, I would say, who would ever think about that I can input these kind of numbers in an equal check function? Yeah, it's just insane, because as a normal human being, I would never think of these possible things. And maybe also the user will never input that data or will never do stuff like that. But you can't be sure, because there's also users that maybe do kind of weird stuff like that. And if that happens in your most important component or your most important authorized page, it could really cause some data leak.
Yeah, sure. Just thinking of, I guess, Murphy's Law, whatever could happen will happen. I'm doing websites for so long, so I know it definitely will happen. Roman, is there anything left from you?
Just interesting thoughts that pop up, or so is the last things to be said. Is it kind of like started reminding me of like Chaos Monkey and like this monkey, crazy monkey testing or so, where it just like started throwing crazy things at functions or APIs or whatnot or so. And those have its like real good value in kind of making products more resilient. So yeah, I'm definitely super intrigued in kind of checking out this whole property testing a little more and fast check.
And I also think that's why fast check chose the monkey as a logo for their library. So
It kind of makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just about to make all of your even APIs, or you can use it anywhere. You can use it with React. You can use it with Vue. You can use it in Angular. You can use it in Node. Yeah, like you had said, it's this kind of chaos monkey theory where you just throw a lot of stuff at your components, functions, or whatever to make them more resilient against anything that could happen.
Very nice.
Exciting.
And I actually like that it's just like called fast check, because I guess if you read about this now or hear about this now and you hear like, yeah, you just throw everything and you might think, isn't it getting slow then? But it has a name fast check already. So that was probably a smart move.
Like one last thing, Toby, I think you have like here a perfect example for a great conference talk to put together. Cause I think like way too few people know about property testing, and like to guide someone or so in like a nice conference talk through, okay, what it basically is and how to introduce it and how to kind of use it with different like components and this kind of stuff and use cases of real life applications. I think this would be super invaluable. So I hope to see you showing this up on one of the big JavaScript conferences soon.
Yeah, hopefully you can do that maybe next year, maybe end of next year. So the topic itself is interesting. I think many people don't know about it, and that's kind of a shame. Maybe I can do a talk about it. And I also thought about lightning talks about this topic, because it's interesting and I really like it. And it should help a lot more people than just only the people that know about it. But yeah, we will see. Maybe it's the next hot topic coming up within the next month. We don't know. So
end of January, I think there's a TestJS summit. And maybe they have still like the call for papers open. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Yeah, and me neither, because I haven't looked in call for papers for months. So
yeah, the corona time. But I try to find it out. And if not, by the way, people, there's a TestJS summit, so I'm not speaking there because I was also kind of in the same conference, corona mood and whatever. But there's a TestJS summit, so maybe next to all of the things and tutorials and links we talked about in this episode, maybe I should also just write down this link to the TestJS summit. It's super cheap, so it's free if you just want to look at the talks, but you have like something below $50 to have a full access. In the full access, you have like access to the speakers and discussions with the other people, and you have the chat and you have an after party, however that will look like, I'm not sure.
Bring your own beer.
Yeah, that's how it is. But I thought it's really nice to have a whole conference on testing.
I stumbled upon a question now. So because you don't know about property-based testing and didn't know about it before, how do you generate or not generate, but how do you think about your data for testing? Or how do you decide what data you want to test your, login component against?
So I kind of like to use something like Faker actually for doing this in certain ways. Like maybe not for a login or so, but I try to kind of have some kind of randomness data in certain functions and working with components. But it's mostly around like three kind of like different cases or so where I say like, okay, this is like a super long string or this is like a number. So I have like my thought of like rough concept, but then I give it some kind of randomness. And so I can verify that it's like still behaving in certain ways, but definitely far from throwing like 1,000 different inputs at one thing so far.
So do you even prepare, so have kind of like helper functions, or do you have kind of like factory functions to prepare data for your tests?
Yes, that's why it completely triggered me on factory functions, because I'm a huge fan of factory functions. I can talk a whole episode about factories, but yeah, it's like I like to use factories for like creating components, kind of creating it for like any kind of like test data. Maybe I even have something like prepared JSON files that are like real life examples, but then I use my factories to take it and replace certain parts of it or destructure it in certain ways. So I always try to really use a lot of smart helper functions around everything that are composable to a certain degree. So I then have very short and meaningful tests. So big fan of factories.
Now, I just had kind of a mind-blowing when you were talking about like the look-in example, kind of because I'm lazy, but also kind of because I'm afraid that like too many or also the wrong tests are probably worse than having no tests. And I'm sorry for everyone who disagrees. But for input fields, I use the HTML5 validator. So like I only want to have something that is an email in this email address field, and internally it uses a regex for that. And I actually don't want to test it because that feels kind of for me like I would test the browser. And why should I do that? But you can go in your browser. You can just go into the HTML and remove the validator. Or you just have ways to do something to your code that you might not expect. So I haven't thought of how helpful it actually is to have a second check for all of your input fields there.
Yeah. So yeah. Golden rule, never trust the browser.
Yeah, and also quite funny in... So over the last weekend, I implemented or kind of hacked, you could say, advent calendar for my company because we just wanted to do something nice and more mindful for the December. Yeah, and today we launched it. I'm totally okay with the result, but the first thing another developer of us was just doing, hey, you can, you don't need the client-side validation check. You can just grab the data from this XYZ response, etc. And yeah, so you have several types of users and they will always find a way around your validation. So you shouldn't rely on one validation at all.
Yeah, absolutely. If somebody wants to destroy your app, they usually find a way. So always make sure to be prepared as you can.
Totally. So it might be that even especially JavaScript really needs like this property-based testing. It's a shame that it's like the one of the languages that doesn't have it like in your usual workflow already, and that there are no more books or courses. I checked on front-end masters actually, and I just typed in property-based testing and there was nothing.
Yeah, it's really a niche. And I saw that the author of the library of FastCheck did a talk on the React Europe this year. I really think it's coming, or maybe it's getting better now, but it's just another functional testing philosophy that's getting more popular and maybe just needs some more time to be mainstream next year or 2022. I don't know. Like always, the great things will never get noticed at first, and later everyone is saying, oh, property-based testing was there since 10 or 10 years, but we've never used it because it was shit. No, now it's great again.
I liked property-based testing before it was cool.
Yes.
That's a good t-shirt. We should get it for the show.
Yes! Oh my gosh, yeah. I did the same with you, by the way, and it worked out for me.
I think it was the same with React and Angular and all of it. Yeah, I used React when it was in beta, so I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, you tell me I'm using Vue 3 and I used the setup script RFC. That was not a good idea. Anyway, are you ready for the picks?
Born ready.
Yes.
Okay, then obviously guests first.
Yes, so my pick for today is beard oil. Sorry, I needed to translate it to English. Yeah, because you are bored during Corona and you also invest maybe more time into your appeals and looks. I just thought about, yeah, I never cared about very that if my beard is looking great enough, or most of the time it was too short to even think about. But lately I was interested in all of this taking care of your beard. So I invested a lot more time into beard oil and found this great product. Unfortunately, it is a German site, but it's called Beard Royale, and it's really great oil. I can only recommend that, and it helps your skin, and everything is just smoother in the face.
So if you weren't sold on property-based testing yet, I guess now you really are, because if you have the time and like the head to think about something like an oil for the skin, yes, I'm really sold now. I want to think about my hair too now.
Yeah, this is the advantage of property-based testing. You have time between your work to search for beard oil.
Wow. Amazing.
As passionate beard face, I'm super sold on this one.
Okay, very nice. So obviously this is the most important thing that will be linked in the show notes. Roman, what do you have for us?
So my pick this week is like a tool, which is called like Fathome, and you read it on usefathome.com. It's a product analytics tool that kind of like collects analytics data, right? Sounds super boring, but like how I stumbled over this is like I always kind of look at analytics stuff. And of course, like you look at Google Analytics, but I kind of like really hate Google Analytics. And so many other analytics tools are kind of like really kind of annoying, like, oh, you have to pay either per domain, or it's like super complex to set up, and then they collect a lot of data. And like this Fathome system looks like so simple to get on, and they really want to say, okay, like it's super drop-in, and you can collect it for how many domains you ever want or so. It's more kind of based on how many kind of traffic you actually have on all these kind of pages. And it's all anonymized data, so you don't have to deal with all that GDPR stuff, which is like really, really great. And the thing I really liked about why I kind of started kind of to look way deeper into it is they recently posted a nice blog post about like how like some malicious sources or so really try to DDoS their system and kind of maliciously like break everything. And it was like a very great blog post just to read in general to see what does it mean for a small product company if you get like hit really bad and how to kind of manage to kind of bounce back from everything or so. And it's just something where I say like, okay, this is a product I personally feel kind of invested in, and kind of how to tell the story, what they go through, and how passionate they are about like the product that they're building. So this is my pick, and definitely give it a look.
Yeah, that's very nice, especially like having some alternative to like Google Analytics. Is Google Analytics still unblocked? Like in Safari, I think Safari now blocks like kind of everything by default, or also like the pie hole.
I can't tell because I don't use Safari, but
I don't know either. I switched to Brave recently. I love it.
Yeah, Brave is awesome. And I also really love this Phantom pick because I kind of worked in the past in the same area like they are. So I work for a company that has a product on the same field like Google Analytics, only with data protection in mind. And I also totally understand. I think it's when I looked at the website, you need to pay a bit money to use it. Is this right? So it's not free like Google Analytics. But I really like to support these kind of projects and also think data privacy should be a first-class citizen for every website.
Yeah, it definitely has a small entry fee, but I'm super happy to pay some money for a service that I actually get value out of. And that's not like abusing my data actually for their own good. So that's what I like.
And from my experience, really, many more people should invest money for this data privacy, because I saw a lot of customers that are just going to Google Analytics because it's free. And that was the only reason they didn't care about data privacy. They didn't care about what happens to the data I track. We use Google Analytics because it's free.
Yeah. Good point. What about you, Vanessa? What is your pick of the week?
Before I'm telling the pick of my week, web developers are just the best. This is the third time I mentioned somewhere that I was using Safari, and immediately, I don't use Safari. It's like back in the days, like I just don't use Internet Explorer, And to develop, I have the CC app to have the responsiveness and to have all of the different features. So if you don't know CC yet,
great product.
Yeah, it's really great. It's just check it out. So it enables you different screen sizes by default. And if you do something, if you scroll in a one screen, it scrolls everywhere. And it has like keyboard and really like touch events. And so nothing comparable with like a emulator in your browser. But obviously I have like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 browsers in the dock of my MacBook, starting obviously with Brave. I know. But a couple of weeks ago, I finally also like downloaded Edge and put it also in a fixed position in the dock. I actually have to say I kind of also like Edge. Maybe because also there weren't any extensions and it was just too clean again. But I was screen sharing at work, and we are just like 2 developers at work. So there were no people like, you use Safari? But it was like immediately, you are a developer. You're using Edge. What's going on there? And I'm like, no. Safari is a new Internet Explorer. Edge is actually fine.
Yeah, Edge is like really, really actually pretty good. Especially since they switched over to WebKit. Now it's like, okay, you have all the power of all the extensions that you want or so. And now it's a decent browser experience. Pretty good experience. That
and I also need to add, I used Safari before as a main browser. So it's not like I just blame Safari. I really tried it and I really loved it in some cases, but most of the time I needed my developer tools, and sorry, but the Safari developer tools are not on the same page like Firefox and Google Chrome dev tools. Yeah, and it was just a huge pain for me to switch all the time the browsers when I needed it just to take a quick glance in something like the dev tools.
Yeah, I know. Switching to my pick, I met some friends a while ago, and they told me that there's a book about artificial intelligence. This is something that it's kind of like a huge buzzword, like also like blockchain or Bitcoin. It's just like everybody heard of these words, but no one really understands what it is. And it seems like super important. Like in 5 years, we could have Terminators, but also probably just in 100 years, and we just don't know. And so this is a book, A Guide for Thinking Humans is the subline, and it actually explains you what artificial intelligence is, how it came up, what the status quo is, and it's not a complete Bible, so it's not a book that you can use like TensorFlow 2 afterwards, but just for us as humans to understand what is actually going on. And if we have to, if we will have Terminators in 5 years and upload our brain into the cloud, or maybe not. So this is my pick of the day.
Sounds cool. So, and if you would use property-based testing, you would even have more time to read the book.
Okay. So, thank you very much, Toby. I'm actually really excited. I can't wait to try it out.
Yeah, thank you for having me. So, it was really great. And Fast Check is free. You can use it now.
Awesome.
Then, thank you again and see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
In the Mending Early Access program, you read books, watch live videos and complete live projects as they are being created. Use the code PODEXCEPT20 to get a 35% discount on all of their products. You can read the link in the show notes.